Sloan, I'm an addict. We'd worked this out, he was going to start, but I guess this is why it's going to be. It's an honor to be here. I imagine everybody says that, but it is an honor to be chosen to speak and asked to speak. And my self-esteem tells me that, I have nothing to share. There's people out there with much better messages, and why do they want me, I'll do the best I can with what I got, and that's all I can do, and that's all, my higher power expects of me. My clean date's 9/7 of 1988, and it's that time, and I'm getting weirded out again, so my thoughts get scattered, and I think I have nothing to share, and I haven't had any major things happen to me when I've been ill and things like that, but I have had some stuff. I fight with arthritis every day, and I'm getting up there in age, and just trying to find something to work in my body that makes me able to work every day and not be a narcotic, it's a struggle, I fight with this arthritis that I can hardly close my hands, and I work with my hands, and it's a struggle from day to day just to not say screw it and go get something that makes me feel better, because I know what will make me feel better or not feel. I know those things I can take, and there's times I want to, for me, the biggest thing is staying close to a higher power and relying on that higher power to help me make the right decisions, the basic text says a lot of things about times of illnesses and stuff like that. We are responsible, we can't expect our doctors to know everything, and even in today, even today they don't know much, it seems like, I used to like to smoke a lot of cigarettes and paint a lot of cars, and couldn't breathe very well most of the time, and colds, get a lot of colds, and the doctors always wanted to give me codeine and cough syrup, and I said, put on my chart, big red letters, no narcotics, but it's there, but he still orders it every time, and I can't take this stuff, that's right, and he's not responsible for that, he's got 100,000 patients, I'm the one that's responsible for that, I'm the one that has to remind him, and then go to the pharmacist and make sure, that's all my responsibility. Like I said, I've been around a couple of years, and I do have a little bit of experience, in my personal experience in this, and like I said, I'm responsible. And then a couple of years ago, I hit a car, my bike, and even with this knowledge, I go to the hospital and do you want a shot of morphine? And I say, no. I can't let them do that to me, how funny they are. I said, well, how about a couple ibuprofen, Oh, no, we can't give that to you, but we'll give you a shot of morphine, And so, that's okay. And it was in another state. I was in Akron. I was far from home, and I know all the things to do, But I don't want to be a pain in the ass. I don't want to make long distance phone calls and expect people to call me. But you know what? All I had to do was ask, And even though I didn't reach out, they still found out and they called me, And I told them that story. And they say, you got to get better, Whatever they're telling you to do, you have to get better. You have to, you have to, you have to take some pain medication once in a while. You know, you'll heal faster, your blood pressure won't skyrocket, and you'll feel better. You know, it's not about being a martyr, but I still couldn't let them put that in me. And it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm in pain, and I'm happy to be alive. And the nurse comes in to check to see if you're, you know, still living, and I'm wide awake, you know, looking around, and, hey, how you doing? And I said, what's wrong? And I said, oh, I hurt, I can't sleep, you know. And it's 3, she don't have much to do, and she sat down and talked to me, and I said, you know, I've told everybody, I'm a recovering addict, you know, I can't, you know, all they want to do is give me this morphine. And she says, well, did you think about taking a pill? Man, no, I didn't, you know. So finally, I surrendered and let them give me a couple pain medication pills. And I felt bad about it, you know. It's been ingrained in me so long not to get high, not to take narcotics, that, you know, I didn't want to take these Vicodin. I just hit a car on my motorcycle, you know, and I'm fighting it, you know, I'm fighting it, it's quiet except for my roommate, and he gets antsy every 3 hours, and I talk to my higher power, and he says it's okay, I'm not faking it, you know, it's gonna be okay. I know what to do. I know to get out, and I know to talk about it and call people and just do all those things I'm supposed to do. There are times when I have to take pain medication. But you know what? In almost 20 years, those four Vicodin, I've been so blessed. That's all I've ever had to take in narcotics. And I've had teeth pulled, and you know, and the first thing I tell the dentist is, I don't want any Percocets. Oh, you have a problem with pain pills too? Yeah, I got the only hick doctor that's, that had a problem with pain pills, you know, I think. But, you know, what? I know what to do today, and I know I can take ibuprofen and be pretty safe and it not hurt me, you know. But you know what? If I hit another car, my motorcycle, I'm not going to be ashamed to take any, you know, narcotics, because it'll help me. It'll help me, and I'm not faking it, you know. I used to fake it pretty well, so I think that's what keeps me from doing it. But I told Dan, I said, you know, this is going to be short, because I don't have a whole bunch to say, and I never have a whole bunch to say, but thank you.
To introduce the second speaker, Danny L. from the Beechwood Group.
Hi everybody, I'm Danny, I'm an addict.
Hey, Danny.
You sure you can hear me all back there?
Speak up.
Huh? My clean date is July 7th, 1991. And just like Paul's self-esteem, I think our self-esteems do push-ups together, because I almost always feel like I have nothing to say. But when I was asked to speak on this subject, I thought, wow, okay, maybe I do have something to say, you know? So, you know how when you're running doctors and cashing prescriptions, you always wish... See, I didn't have that rap that everybody else had, or some of the people had, you know, when I was trying to get pain pills and running around to doctors. I always wished for these illnesses that would allow me to get over easier. You know, 17 years clean, I've got them. You know, I've got them. I could walk into a doctor and I'm sure I can get him to write. But the thing is, today I don't want that. When I was in treatment, right, rehab, I went away. I was lucky to get 35 days in a luxury suite in Altoona in the woods. It was beautiful. Last vacation I had, too. I guess I had my honeymoon was a vacation. When I was in treatment there, and, you know, you go through the blood work initially. In rehab, they told me I should seek medical attention at some point. Well, that scared me, and I wanted to stay clean, but I could not deal with medical issues at that time. So one of the things I started doing while I was there was hitting my knees. And the one thing I asked for other than staying clean was, you know, let me deal with things as I can. And that happened. So 2 years go by and I haven't done anything to deal with any medical situation. So it's now 93. And I'm thinking, okay, I better start dealing. And I do that. And the first thing I find is that my liver enzymes are way up. Dangerously high. Iron levels, dangerously high. Liver enzyme levels. And, you know, They told me I had Hep C, and, you know, what that does to me, when I heard that, I felt like I was damaged goods. My, you know, what little self-worth I had was like dwindling. And it took a long time to become okay with that and not make that a deciding factor as to what I'm like as a human being or what my personality is. But it was a long struggle because, you know, I didn't want to tell people, oh, I have Hep C, I have this other illness. You know, it's different when you're doctor shopping and you're telling them you have illnesses. You know, it's different. You know, you want to brag about that, but when you have no, you know, payoffs other than staying clean another day, you know, I don't want to brag about, you know, the things that I have or am. Well, anyway, they decide I should be on interferon, and I went through 6 months. It was back then, it was a 3-time a week shot, 6 months treatment. And I wasn't heavy. I mean, I was thin back then, and I still lost 25 pounds. And it was horrible. But you know what? I made it through. It didn't work, and I couldn't deal with it any longer. Around that time, it's funny how my higher power prepares me for the future. Around that time, I had someone ask me to be their sponsor. They had 30 days clean. And I was speaking somewhere, and after the meeting, they asked me to be their sponsor, and I was, you know, thrilled. I had sponsored a few people up to that point, and nobody stayed clean, and I think I had one other peer person staying clean, and I was sponsoring him. Anyway, it's 30 days, so I'm hanging out with him and, you know, talking to him every day. He gets 60 days clean and he starts noticing some problems going on with him. He goes and he starts getting checked out. It turns out he has Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. Now, that anybody that knows about that disease, there's maybe a 1% chance that someone's going to survive longer than a year once you've been diagnosed, and you wither away, your muscles atrophy, you can't walk, you can't move, your speech goes, and you lay there and you die. So, what do you tell somebody? Oh, don't pick up and get to a meeting. I mean, that's what I was programmed to tell people. Don't pick up, get to a meeting. Work a step. What the fuck do you tell somebody who you know is, So, I pick him up, we'd go to meetings, eventually he couldn't walk, and, he had to use a walker, and he was so embarrassed about it, it was the hardest thing to watch somebody go through that, and eventually, he sought help through the Hemlock Society, which, I kid people sometimes, hey, I'm going to make some iced tea. Want some hemlock tea? Meanwhile, that's a way to end your life, and you learn how to do it, and you do it, and that's what he did. After he passed away, there was a tape there. To this day, I haven't listened to it. I can't listen to it. So what problems can I possibly have? Tell me, what kind of illness can be thrown at me that I'm not going to be able to handle? Unfortunately, a bunch of them were thrown at me. I was rather active. I was in an over 40 soccer league, and the first time I had to deal with pain medication, I ran into the goalpost full speed, man. I'm running like this. I was a goalkeeper, and I'm running. Bang! Well, I hit so hard right here into the goalpost that the bone in the back broke, right? And and you could hear that. It was dong. And the guy, a friend of mine who was coaching, he comes over, he looks down, he says, "Sub." I go to the emergency room, and I'm thinking, I'm an addict, I can't use anything, and I'm like, oh, I couldn't move, it was so painful, and the guy that was the doctor in the emergency room was a guy that I know from a Monday night NA meeting. He's the doctor there. He's the emergency room doctor, and I'm telling the nurses before he comes in, I'm a recovering addict, I can't take medication. He comes in and he knows me. I go to meetings with him, and he says, you're going to need it, and that's something that you want to hear. You want to hear. You're going to need it. You got to take this. You're right. I need it. But when but it was really painful, and it took a while, and I had to stay on meds for a little while, and you know, they put you in a sling, but keep your arm, you know, and so I had a few of those kinds of experiences over the years where I had to take meds, and you know, sports related injuries. I haven't had those in quite a while now. I haven't been active sports wise for a while, but so I think my next bout with illness and recovery I have a condition called hemochromatosis, which is the method the body uses of storing iron isn't right with me naturally. So it stores your iron in your organs, all over in your blood supply, but then the additional goes and stored in your organs. And the only treatment for this, check this out, is bloodletting, right? A medieval treatment that they used to do back. Well, so I have to do this bloodletting, and for a while it was like every week, you know, they'd take a pint of blood, and that alone makes you weak. Well, eventually the numbers came down to where I could do it periodically, and now I don't know what my schedule's going to be. I still have to do it, but it's you know, once every month or two, and but you know, so that also led to me feeling less about myself or inadequate. But you know, the inadequacy that I experienced before Walt, the guy I sponsored, just it didn't bother me as bad as it did back then, you know, before that. I was fortunate that right around the time I found out about Hep C, and I met my wife. I met the person that I was going to marry, and it didn't matter. The illnesses that I had, it didn't matter whether I had them. So I know for somebody who's single and finding out they have these illnesses, I think it can be more devastating than someone who has someone to share that stuff with. But anyway, bloodletting, and then I started interferon again in 2002. See, I tried the holistic method of getting rid of the Hep C. Turned out I had a genotype 1, which is the most difficult to remove. I had kept my liver enzymes normal for a while by eating healthy, by herbs, and diet. Well, I decided that I'm going to really try something, you know, different. And I went to see, I started seeing a kinesiologist, which is somebody that, it's a study of muscles, and it's a, he started me on a vegan trip where I was vegetable juicing and cleansing and taking different herbs it was rough. It was a tough thing to do, but I tried it, and I lost weight. I was down to 145. I was lean, you know. I was still playing soccer, and I realized when you're that lean and you're playing soccer, your bones are more brittle, because, you know, I lost this weight in like, you know, a month and a half, you know, and anyway, I did more problems, and anyway, so that's another side story there, when I finally went to the medical doctor to find out you know, results are of my, you know, changing my eating habits, lifestyle, and it turned out that my liver enzymes went sky high and my Hep C viral load went through the roof. And, you know, after all this work, I said, fuck it, and I went out and got a cheeseburger. You know? Then started interferon again. Went through that for 12 months. And that didn't work. So during the 12 months that I was on the interferon, I was experiencing discomfort in my jaw. I thought, you know, another side effect. I mean, there's so many side effects with interferon anyway, I was finished with it, and I was playing soccer. I mean, I was really active. I was moving, you know, hustling, and one day I'm driving to pick Brandy up, and you know, months after I'm finished with interferon, and I'm getting the same thing. I'm wondering, I don't know what it is, but I called my wife. I said, I feel strange. You know, I don't know what it is. I just feel weird. She said, well, what are you calling me for? Call 911. So I did that. I called 911. And, you know, and I felt, I'm sitting there waiting for these guys to come. I feel less than waiting for an ambulance to come to take care of me, right? They get there, oh, I'm all right, oh, you know. You know, that macho bullshit. And anyway, they get me to the hospital, and they determine that you know, there's some heart problems happening, and you know, that wasn't happy to hear. But so they keep me because my numbers are not good, and they gave me a catheterization, and you know, they put you out for the catheterization. So I don't know what's going on, but from what my wife tells me, the doctors come over to her and they say, Mrs. Laffey, we really don't know why your husband is alive. He's 100% blocked. There's some blood hitting his heart from secondary arteries but you know, with his level of activity, he should be dead. So that didn't register with me, but I mean, she wasn't on any meds at the time. I mean, they put me out to go through this thing, and plus they calmed me down because of. So, I mean, the whole thought process with this didn't hit me until many months later, how close I was to death. They wouldn't let me leave. So, you know, are you experiencing any chest pain? Yeah. You know, I mean, that's what I wanted to say. I didn't say that. I mean, at the time when I first went in, I wasn't experiencing any pain. But then it started, and I didn't know if I was fabricating the pain or if it was real or well, after the surgery, the quadruple bypass surgery, I wasn't fabricating shit, man. That hurt. You know, and I fought for that drip. I fought for it. You know, I wanted that drip. I heard so many people talk about the drip. I had to have it. You know, the minute I was on it, my respiratory rate went so low that they said, you can't be on this. And they took me off of it. Which is a good thing, because I would have pushed the button until I died. There's no doubt in my mind that's what I would have done. It's a good thing you're in a hospital environment when you go through these surgeries, and not, you know, in a burned out basement. That's the advantage. So 10 days after the heart surgery, I'm at home, you know, and I develop a staph infection, and I'm in the hospital longer for the staph infection than I was for the surgery. Anyway, so there's that whole recovery process from there. But it was really a wake-up call in my life. Man, you know, and to this day, I don't go to a pool. I'm embarrassed by the scars. I have a scar here, 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 and down here. Just this year, I started wearing shorts, maybe a little bit last year. The staph infection I experienced here looked like, I mean, they didn't do plastic surgery to correct it, so it really looks bad, the scars, and I'm embarrassed by that. And it's an ongoing thing. I don't know how to deal with that. I'm not to the point where I'm okay to walk around without a shirt on. I mean, I was in the sun. I had a tan every year. Now I don't even take my shirt off, and I'm embarrassed by it. And that's a process that I see change when I look back since 2005, when I had the surgery. So I don't know. Maybe next year you'll see me running around playing frisbee and breaking shoulders and, you know, with no shirt on. So, you know, you'd think, okay, well, that's enough for one lifetime. But my recovery from my heart, I was inactive. I wasn't moving much. And in 2006, I had two herniated discs. Now, I've been through a lot of surgery, and I've been through a lot of pain. I have never in my life experienced pain like this. And check this out, right? I'm laying at home on the floor. Nobody's there, and I know I have to call 911, but you see, there's no way I'm going to call 911 until I take a shower or a bath. So I crawl up the steps and get into the bathtub and turn the water on, you know, naked naturally. And, you know, I feel better that I'm clean, but then I can't get out of the bathtub. I mean, the pain was excruciating. I've never experienced anything like this in my life. You know, I'd go through two heart surgeries before I'd have back pain again. So I called my son. I said, "You got to help me get out of the bathtub so that I can call 911." He's like, but he did. He came over, helped me get out of the bathtub, and then I called 911. But I couldn't move from the bathroom floor, and I live, you know, the bathroom's on the second floor, and it's a tight, cramped house, and they had to put me on this seat and carry me down and out. And meanwhile, you know, every single little movement was like, I can't even explain the kind of pain from back that I had. It was fucking incredible. So I get into the ambulance, and I'm moaning, I'm screaming, and that's when the guy, you know, they could give you morphine, but they can't give you ibuprofen. And he said, you know, you need something for your pain. And I said, I'm a recovering addict. I've got 17 years clean. You know, this is not at the time I had 15 years clean. You know, and I tell him that, and, you know, he sees my face all contorted. You know, and, you know, then, you know, I say, okay, just do it. And, man, the pain was gone in a New York minute. I mean, it was gone. And then he says, you know, if you need some, it'll be another one. We can give you one more injection on the way over. And I'm at timer, you know. All right. You know, I don't care how much time clean you have, man. As soon as you put that shit in your system, it's back to square one. You know, it's like. So I get there, and I go through the test, the MRI, and then there's a rehab from that. You know, I have to go to physical therapy, and so, okay, I get through all that. I'm on meds for a little while, and then the last thing that's happened to me, other than the FBI and the crime task force and all that shit, okay, that's a separate story for a different lead. after I get through all that, interferon again, this time they want 18 months. Oh, I forgot to mention this. During the second course of interferon that I had about 6 months into the treatment, and they're saying, my wife was saying, you know, you need to get evaluated psychologically. And, you know, I didn't want to go to meetings. I didn't want to talk to people. I didn't want to go to my home group. I didn't want to do anything about anything. I wanted to watch movies, and that was it. And I went and got evaluated, and I guess there's a whole list of things. The only thing that I did not have yet was delusions, right? I wasn't making things. I wasn't believing things were, you know, what the hell is the word? Manifesting. Yeah, thanks, Chuck. I'm sure we all know a little bit about delusions. But so I started on a psychotropic medication, and that got me level, ground level. And then, you know, 18 more months of interferon. You know what? This year I got up here. This is the first time I've been to this retreat. I've been here the last, I don't know, 6-7 years. But the last time in 5 years, 2008, 2005, this first time in 5 years that I've been up here, like, not under interferon influence or rehabbing or anything. And I feel really good. Dealing with all of this crap is taxing on my recovery. But, you know, how I deal with it is I share about it. I have to share about it. I don't have these secrets, you know, that I'm worried about telling you something so you're going to get so over on me somehow, or I'm going to feel less than. The bottom line is here, it's my life I'm talking about, and I need to share my inadequacies, my health problems. I need to do that, get it all out and deal with it. And when I do that and I take the risks and the trust, have trust that everything's going to be okay, you know, it was difficult having to tell that first person back then that I had hepatitis C. It was difficult. And it became less difficult as I did it more often. The only way I know to stay clean, deal with these issues, and and recover is I've got to share them. You know, take myself out of it. You know, allow the people in my life to help me. Today, they helped me less than they had to the last few years. But that doesn't mean that I'm 100% or that, you know, I'm normal. Because I'll never get back there. But it's my responsibility today to take care of myself. And that's how I have to do it. But so, last thing I'm going to say is, you know, I bottomed out a month and a half ago on weight and feeling bad. Bottomed out. Like, you know, I keep thinking of what I used to be and how in good shape I was and tan. And so I was having trouble walking by and looking in the mirror at myself. I didn't like looking at me. And this is just 2 months ago, a month ago. You know, the guy that taught me how to be a vegan and all that back then, I mean, he was off the cuff, man. He was like way, you know, beyond what I ever want to be, but but he did teach me some things, and I had some tools that I learned from that experience that I'm doing now with cut sugars out of my diet again. Except for this weekend. I had a few marshmallows and a s'mores last night. I've cut out breads, and just by doing those two things, my caffeine intake is lessened because I can't handle it all. And I started vegetable juicing. The vegetable juice is, I'll go to the market and I'll buy, a couple heads of lettuce, some spinach, some Swiss chard, and I'll get carrots and celery and beets and, ginger. I'll go home, clean them all out, lay them on the table, and, run it through the juicer, get a whole bunch to drink, and I tell you what, man, that's amazing. I've lost 15 pounds in the last 3 weeks, and I actually feel better. So diet is so important. I mean, it's amazing what all I have to do is, be vigilant about that program as well as my recovery program. But anyway, it's an honor to be asked, like Paul was saying, it's an honor to be asked to do anything in NA, but to speak at a retreat is to me is doubly honoring. The fuck, is that right? But thank you for letting me share, and I appreciate everyone being here.